There was this single man living with his elderly father. And his father he would help take care of, but his father was very wealthy. Well, this single guy had been living with his father for, you know, a long time. And he thought, well, you know, I think it's time for me to find a wife because I want somebody to take care of and be able to spend this fortune on that I'm going to inherit when my dad passes away real soon. So he went off to this investment meeting, and he was there, and this beautiful, beautiful woman walks in the back. She's blonde. She's a bombshell. It just takes this guy's breath away. And he goes up to her and says, you know, I don't seem like much. You know I may not look like I have much, but my dad is super wealthy. I mean, he has hundreds of millions of dollars that I'm going to inherit when he dies. Being very impressed, she took his card. And then 3 months later, she married the dad. I know. I want to say this morning, thank you to Jeff Wassum and all these decorations, all the wording, the wreaths, the trees. Then if you go into sacred grounds, a beautiful Christmas tree. He spends endless hours on many Saturdays, or, you know, we have concerts in here all the time. And this stuff is always taken down. And then he comes in and puts it back up every Sunday morning early or late Saturday, and just works tirelessly. So, Jeff, we'll stand up for a second. Would you mind? Thank you so very much. It just looks amazing, and for all that you do to spruce this place up. So it needs a lot of help after some of these concerts. Well, we are in the season. We are in the Christmas season, and how many of you have not decorated yet? Whoa. Okay, let's pray right now. I decorated a long time ago, and I'm just like, and you know that. But we're entering into a time of a season that I would love to say is not complicated. All right? I can remember being a kid, and I have two sisters. They're younger than me. But the most stress I had at Christmas was I would dress up as Santa Claus to my baby sisters, all right? And I would do things like get on the roof of my house and, like, beat on the roof. You're like, what? Yeah, that's what we did in the South. And and so I would then be in the yard one year, and my little sisters would look outside, and they'd be like, oh, it's Santa Claus. He's watching us. Now we have Elf on the Shelf. Have you seen those? To where you put those up and you tell your kids, you be good because that elf's watching you. And they're like, we don't want to mess up because the elf on the shelf is reporting to Santa Claus. I remember it was just, what are the gifts I'm going to get? I'm so excited. You know, I've asked for this, and Christmas morning, and you just open up gifts and there's just no complications. But then everything started to change. As I grew up and my sisters grew up, they got married. So then it was just not, well, we just always meet at our house for Christmas. Then it was, well, whose house are we going to for Christmas? All right, we're going to go to this house Christmas Eve. We're going to go to this house Christmas morning. And then they had kids. And then there's more things. It's now we live across the country. So now it's like, I got to fly in. I've got to see this person. Oh, I don't have time to see this person. But if I don't see this person, then I'm really going to feel bad because they're going to be really upset. All right, so Christmas has become a little bit more complicated for me. Has it become more complicated possibly for you? You know, it's just one of those things to where the time compression of Christmas now and Christmas Eve, because we love it, but it just gets a little tough. I have a good friend back in Atlanta. And he's married, has kids. His parents divorced. And his mom remarried, but his dad didn't. So he was getting ready for Christmas one year, and he knew he had to go spend, he planned to spend Christmas Eve with dad. And then he would go away and go to his mom's for Christmas morning, late Christmas Eve night and Christmas morning. And he felt so bad about it because he's like, Dad's by himself. He has nobody. And he's going to be spending, he's going to wake up Christmas morning with nobody. No children's voices. And he just felt horrible. He's like, I just don't know what to do. He called his best friend and said, this is my dilemma. And I just don't know how to handle this. And his friend told him a story that I think is from a remarkable way to look at it. As he's telling my friend Andy this story, he said, when I learned this lesson, when me and my wife were celebrating our 30-year anniversary, and we were ready to go celebrate, and on the phone rang, and it was my mom. And my dad has been in World War II, been in the Vietnam War, and he has PTSD. And he had had episode after episode after episode, continuing to have episode. It was like an ongoing thing. And as we're going out for our 30th anniversary meal, when my mom gets on the phone and says, you got to come over right now. You got to come over right now and help take care of your dad again. All right, you got to come over, help deal with the situation, settle him down. And he said, that day I made a strategically bad decision. You say, what? He made a strategically bad decision as he tells the story. Because he left, went and took care, helped his mom and the caretaker take care of his dad, which he had done hundreds of times. But here's exactly the words that he said. He raced off to try and solve a 40-year-old problem. And in doing so, created a brand new problem at home. Okay, now some of you, that's probably worth you coming this morning. Hang in there with me. He raced away to solve a 40-year-old problem that was not going to get solved. And in turn, created a whole new problem at home. Now, the sad part about it is, sometimes this season, this is exactly what happens to us. And it could be our story. Christmas, the most wonderful time of the year, is also, for some, the most terrible time of the year. There's tension in Christmas, and this is what it is. It exaggerates all the bad, and at the same time, points us at something incredible. It exaggerates all the bad, but it points to something so incredible. And it's not the most wonderful time of the year just because what is happening. Now, this is our first slide. The next one. It's not the most wonderful time of the year because necessarily just because what is happening. Because if we just look around us to what is happening, I'm not just talking about what's going on in the current culture. All right, we've been down that road. We've talked about that. I'm not just talking about, but also there's three things I want us to remember this morning. There's problems we can't solve. There are people that we can't control. And there are expectations that we cannot meet. Now just hold there for a second. Because most of the time we realize that we're the problems that we can't solve. Most of the time, we're the person we can't control. Hello? Oh, it's just me. I'm sorry. And then there's always expectations I set for people that will never be met. So therefore, it is not Christmas, the most wonderful time of the year. It's not because what is happening. But this morning, I want to communicate to you, it is because of what happened. It's not what is happening, it is what has happened. At Easter, we love Easter. We if you were here with us this past Easter, we celebrate the one event where Jesus came and he paid the debt for our sins. Christmas, though, is a season to where we look for this event, and a season of this event that changed the course of history. It changed everything, and it allows us to center ourselves on what the true meaning of us and who we are about. It makes us stable It makes us hopeful. It allows us to find purpose. The most wonderful time of the year, not because we may not have somebody that's physically with us anymore. There's a lot of people in the room who've lost people, and we're going to talk about that later this morning. But it's a reminder for us of what Jesus did, what God did for us by sending his son Jesus. I love the Gospels. And it talks about, even Rich mentioned it last week about the red letters. But Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. But here's the differential point of these four. Matthew, Mark, and Luke basically tell the Christmas story the same way. They start with a very detailed description of what happened. And in our Christmas Eve service, we most of the time read from like Luke. Luke was a doctor. He is very detailed. You can tell in his writings. But we usually use Luke, but we don't ever use John because John starts off his book entirely different than Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and they all were with Jesus. So the reason we call these our Gospels is because these individuals were with Jesus. They walked with him. They talked with him. But the first three start a certain way, and John, we're going to see this morning, is a very different. He doesn't even have a birth announcement. He has a very different perspective of who Jesus was. What do you mean, Eric? Well, John was an old man, a very old man when he wrote, many scholars believe, when he wrote John. As a matter of fact, it was one of those things to where he was sitting around and he's like, I'm on my last leg here. So I need to write down the most important thing that I want to communicate to you. And I want to communicate to the people around me and what the message of Jesus is all about. As a matter of fact, whenever John would travel and people knew he was around, you know what they'd ask him? John, sit down here and tell us stories. Just tell us stories. If during those times, if they knew that you walked and talked with Jesus, you lived with Jesus, they wanted to hear the stories. And John probably told these stories hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. But I also love the book of John, and I love this because this is the one guy that took the message of Christianity and took the message of God. And he brought it down to one word. You're like, what? One word. And what is that word? Love. This is the same guy that took it all. And you're like, oh, well, that's cool. You know, that's great. That's a great message. That's exactly what. But wait, we've got to go back and see what was happening with John that would even give him the inclination to do this. To do this at all, because John had lost many, many friends. Now, I've had a lot of tragedy in my life. You've had a lot of tragedy, at least most of you have had a lot of tragedy in your life, a lot of pain. But let me just say this. This morning, you're going to see pain and tragedy from a guy, this guy, John, unlike probably we've ever experienced before. He lost all his friends. He lost them. His family members, gone. He lost his society and his culture, gone. He was alive when Nero sent his general Vespasian into Galilee. I don't know if you remember this in history, but Nero sent General Vespasian into Galilee and would start a crusade to murder all the Jews. And John was alive during this time. As a matter of fact, not only were millions of Jews murdered, hundreds of thousands were taken and put into the slave market. And John was there to see it all happen. As a matter of fact, he was also around when Vespasian put his son in front of Jerusalem. Remember this in history? For 7 months, they surrounded the city of Jerusalem and they cut off all supplies. And they starved the Jewish people. There were plagues that broke out. And there was stuff that continually happened that all these people died. As a matter of fact, the temple was also destroyed. And it would never be rebuilt after this point. All this chaos. And as a matter of fact, John had already lost Peter. Peter had already been killed, and so had Paul by Nero. So after all this stuff had happened, John writes this. Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples. Now, when he's saying this, the book of John has seven significant signs that John talks about, writes that Jesus did. But there are many others. John only had seven. But that's why he says, in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. So as he's about to communicate to us what this is all about, this is the next verse he says. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. Life, I'm not talking about physical life. John was not talking about physical life. He was talking to a group of people that were living, all right? He was writing this to people who were living in the day. But he said that you may believe so that God, that is love, he is writing this now that you and I can believe. And after reading this and after seeing it and after reading his book, you wouldn't just be amazed that, oh, wow, these are great stories. These are awesome stories. No, it's not just that. It's that we would be amazed because and believe that Jesus is the Son of God. That's why he wrote it. And that we would have life in his name. Well, even though all this stuff had happened to John, he had seen it, he had smelled it, he had experienced it. Even with all the loss, John still believed there was some other life beyond this physical life. He believed that there's more than just me standing here and coming to preach on Sunday morning and then going home and watching football or whatever you're going to do, go eat brunch, and then Monday morning comes and we're going to work for another 2 weeks and we're going to take Christmas off, and what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Who are we going to see? Where are we going to go? How are we going to fly? And oh, I'm so stressed. I don't have enough money to buy the presents, and I got to work extra overtime. I got to do this. Out of all this stuff, that is not the life John is talking about. He's talking about a life that is beyond our physical life. And that is the encouraging words that we have here. He still believed there was another life. Now, I love the fact, and when you think about John, I want you to think about this. John was the disciple that was at the feet of Jesus on the cross, to where Jesus looked down from the cross and said, John, this is your mother. It was Jesus' mother, Mary. But knowing that he was going to die, he put John in care of his mom. And then in turn, he said, Mom, Mary, this is your son, John. So scholars believe that John spent the rest of Mary's life with her, probably in Ephesus. So if there was any disciple that would know exactly what Mary had felt, if there was any disciple that would have heard Mary tell the story of when the angel showed up to Mary and said, you're going to have a baby. Huh? You're going to have a baby. And by the way, you don't need to get pregnant from any man. You're going to have a baby. Huh? They didn't have artificial insemination at that time. But then, how do you think Mary felt when she became pregnant and she started to show and she's walking around and it is very unacceptable to be pregnant, not in a marriage? And what she went through and the pain she went through, or what about this? What about being in Egypt? What about King Herod? What about the killing of all the baby boys? You remember all this was going around during that time. We learn it all from Matthew, Mark, and Luke. If there was anybody that would have heard those stories over and over again, it would be John. He would know how Mary felt. So why didn't he write about it? Because he doesn't. He doesn't talk about Egypt. He doesn't talk about Bethlehem. He doesn't talk about the manger. He doesn't talk about any of that. He totally goes to a different place. He did not do it because he begins with what he feels is significant to who Jesus was. His significant story. Remember, it was a dark time, but let me say this. In a time where things can get so complicated during this season, who is coming and who's not going to come? We're also reminded of what we'll get and what we'll never get. There's a lot of us in here that have lost family members, and most of you know I lost my grandmother just a couple months back, and when my birthday came last week, there was just something hit me, just a sadness hit me, and I think a few of us have talked about something very similar, but a sadness came over me just on that day, that afternoon after church, because I was like, she would usually call me, and she'd say, happy birthday. So there's a lot of us that have lost people, so in spite of who is not going to ever come to our Christmas again, or who will ever see, this is the way that John, he'd lost all his friends, everything. This is the message for this morning. In him was life. I know you're alive. I know you're breathing. But in him, Jesus, was life. Have you ever been around those people that when you're around them, they get so passionate about something and you're like, wow. You're really passionate about that. All right. Versus the ones that sit down and you have to make sure that they're not dead. But you know there's something there. There's something alive. So instead of the birth announcement, John says, in him was life. And that life that was in Jesus was the light of all mankind. What? Have you thought about what was happening here with John? Jesus had, when he was on the scene, all the Jewish people thought, he's the Messiah. He's come to save us. He's come to save us from the Roman tyranny. He's come to save us from the empire. He's come to save us from all this. So when John was writing this, they also thought that Jesus was there for them. It was like a regional savior. It's like he's gonna save us. He's gonna rescue us. And Jesus came not to just for the Jews, and that's what he was reminded, because John was there when Jesus was resurrected. And if you remember the story, Jesus was resurrected, and then everybody got excited again. And they're like, oh, you're back. We're gonna destroy those Romans now. We're going to kick it. It's going to be us again. And you're going to restore Israel. It's going to be great. It's going to be the Jewish nation again. It's going to be awesome. And they said this. They said, when are we going to take back over? When are we going to rule again and get rid of those Romans? And Jesus says, that's none of your business. We're not talking there. But here's what he says. Go into every nation and every ethnic group around the world. And you tell them, make disciples. Make disciples of all people and communicating this message to all mankind. Wait a minute, Jesus. You mean you didn't come just for us progressive liberals? But I thought that's what we signed up for here. Wait a minute, Jesus. You mean you didn't come from just the right-wing, fundamental, Bible-beating, hell-preaching churches? Didn't you just come for us? No. When Jesus communicated this message, the world was very fragmented. We sometimes have to look at our modern-day world and our current culture through the lens of Scripture.
Because it really does. History really does repeat itself. But many, many times, we see exactly the message that was going on. John just doesn't pick these words out and just write them because they sound good and they make a good Christmas message. There's a reason he wrote it. He said, look, Jesus did not come for the Jews only. He did not come to restore Israel only. He came for all mankind. That means it doesn't matter what color your skin is. It doesn't matter what you believe. It doesn't matter who you love. It doesn't matter how you identify. It doesn't matter even if you're from the South and you're a redneck hillbilly. It doesn't even matter that, because it's for all mankind. But I love this next part. The light shines in the darkness. Have you ever been in a dark room and you lit a candle? Now, I do it at my house now, but I love candles. But I make sure all the lights are off because it just looks so much prettier that way. But then you sit back and you're like, it's really dark. Because when I come in at night and nothing's lit up, my snowman's not lit up or my Christmas tree's not lit up. Don't you be judging me. Don't be laughing at me. And it's really dark. And then as soon as I plug in something or as soon as I light a candle, all of a sudden that light starts dispersing the darkness. Now, we're going to have that at our Christmas Eve service here for our candlelight service in communion. It gets real dark and we start lighting candles. And one by one, people's candle lights up. And then all of a sudden, the darkness is gone. But here's the thing about darkness. It tries to snuff out the light. It surrounds it. It snuffs it out. It tries to put the light out because darkness wants darkness. And you cannot, let me remind you, you can't even imagine, I can't even imagine the darkness that the one writing this verse had seen. I've already told you about it, but I want you to think about the darkness and the pain that John was in when he wrote this verse. As a matter of fact, after the destruction of the temple was done. The Jewish nation was out of business. It was done. Now, we're talking about all kinds of stuff in this election season. And we have been. We've talked about it so much now to where I'm like, can we stop talking about it now? But it was so dark during that time. The Jewish nation was done. The temple was destroyed to never be rebuilt. And John is writing this verse. And the darkness has not. Pause. I think he stopped there. I don't know for sure. But he paused right there. After all the pain. After the depression. After the loss of life that was all around him. And maybe, like John, we've experienced very similar pain. Maybe it's a family member that's going through something. Maybe it's a reconciliation with a family member, with a friend. We heard about forgiveness last week. I don't know what it is, but I really believe that John paused here and he says, and the darkness has not, and what are his words? Overcome it. And the darkness has not overcome it. Caesar couldn't do it. Tiberius couldn't do it. Nero couldn't do it. The destruction of the temple didn't do it. The death of Jesus didn't do it. The same John that wrote this is the one that would run to the tomb of Jesus after they reported his body was gone. He would beat Peter there, and he didn't go in because people just didn't go into tombs, all right? Well, Peter definitely did. He didn't care. But this was the same guy that went into the tomb. He was also the same guy that ate lunch or brunch with Jesus on the beach. Sorry, that was a joke. California, everybody eats brunch here. He was the same disciple that sat with Jesus and he ate lunch on the beach with him, the risen Savior, and he was absolutely convinced that no matter how deep the heartache in life was, he was absolutely convinced that no matter how deep the depression that you and I go through, he was absolutely convinced that no matter who tries to destroy our society or who we think is trying to destroy our society, who's trying to destroy our culture, he was absolutely convinced that the darkness has not overcome it. Well, I would have called John crazy at this point. John, you're crazy. Have you looked around you? Have you looked what we don't have? Have you looked at the millions of people who have been killed? Have you looked at the hundreds of thousands that have been sold into slavery? History said that the slave market was so infused with slaves from this time, it was overwhelming. And they were all Jews. Totally demolished. John, and you write this mess. What? I wouldn't have believed it. But John said, no. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. I know Christmas is this time of year is the most wonderful time of the year. But for some of us, it can also be the most terrible time of the year because of what we're facing, what we're going through, who we've lost. What does our future hold? What does my job look like? There's so many things. I don't have a boyfriend. I don't have a girlfriend. All these problems that we have. John says it then, and he says it to us now. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not and will not overcome it. So this Christmas, we're going to experience problems that we can't solve. It's just going to be there. You may get one of those crazy phone calls. And you're going to be a problem that somebody else can't solve. Hello. We're going to be around people we can't control. No matter how rational we think we are, or no matter how much we want to teach them to be empathetic toward our view or our way of things, these things happen. We want them to listen to us. We want them to be, but they're just not going to be somebody we can control. And in expectations we want others to meet, there are expectations that we're never going to meet that other people have on us. And this is Christmas. This is, hello, the most wonderful time of the year. Jesus is life and light who overcomes the dark. There is a faith we call Christianity. There is a faith that you may call it spirituality. We've gone through this in our series of Christian because we're not religious. But this Christmas season, we must remember that Jesus is life and light who overcomes the dark. There's always hope. There's always a reason to believe. God really does hear our prayers. There's always a reason to get up every single day and take the next step. What makes this a wonderful time of the year is not what is happening, but what has happened. That God sent his Son into the world. And remember this statement. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind, not just us. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness, say these four words with me, has not overcome it. Not then, not now, not ever. And that is the message that we have of Christmas this year. And Jesus, he sat with John at the table. And he knew all this stuff was going to be happening. But the message of his life and what he did when he took the bread and he broke it. And he said, "This is my body that is broken for you. As oft as ye eat of it, remember that I died." And then he took the wine and he poured it into the chalice. And he said, "This is my blood shed for you. As oft as you drink it, remember me." I don't know, but I want to say I do, but I really believe that John, when he was writing these verses, this book, as an old man, I really believe he thought back to the time when Jesus was at that table. And he says, "I'm going to die, and it's going to get bad. But I am the light of the world. And in me, there is no darkness." This Christmas, let us remember what John said. And in a dark world, in a dark time, in the darkness around us, the darkness has not overcome. I'm going to ask my communion service to come forward this morning. Both sides are grape juice. And as you know, we serve open communion here at Mission Gathering. That means all are welcome, just the way you are. Because that's what's special about us. God made us that way. During the most wonderful time of the year, let us remember the message that John gave us, the message of the Christ child Jesus. God, speak to our hearts this season, and may we remember that your light will not be put out. The light that you've given us, the light of love, the darkness will not overcome it. Come when you're ready.